A scathing new report faults the federal government's enforcement of laws that protect children from harm. The report came from the Children's Advocacy Institute that's based at the University of San Diego Law School. It reviewed the government's own reporting over a 3-year period, and it found that no state is in substantial conformity with minimum federal standards. That means that children are unprotected from abuse and neglect. Robert Felmuth, executive director of the Children's Advocacy Institute, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you.
What does this report tell us that we didn't already know?
Well, it tells us the extent of the failure to exercise the law, to enforce the law, applicable to a very special group of kids. These are kids who are abused and neglected, the proverbial least among us. 680,000 are found to have been abused and neglected every year. 1,500 die from abuse and neglect. And many of them go into state custody. They become foster children, a population that is largely concealed because of the confidentiality of that system. We have a Congress which has enacted a number of statutes to provide minimum protections for those children. And our question is, are they being followed by the states? And our answer is no.
So if the states aren't enforcing the laws, then why are you finding fault with the federal government?
Because the federal government enacts mandatory floors that the states must follow and buttresses that with $9 billion in federal money. Many of the rights we're talking about are constitutional rights as well. And so there is an obligation by the federal government to have at least that floor upheld, to have law and order, law enforcement. These are federal statutes. These are congressional acts. There's congressional intent involved, and it should be followed. It's not being followed. State after state is ignoring all sorts of protections. They're taking advantage of the fact these kids are not in the public eye. The outcomes are terrible. The federal government's own review of these systems is condemnatory. State after state after state, no state is doing really well. Some states are doing worse than others. But instead of enforcing the law as they're required and going to the states and saying, hey, you're not complying with the visit the kid every 30 days. You're not complying with the disclosure of child abuse deaths requirement. You're not complying. You're not complying. You're getting $9 billion. $100 million is going to be cut off until you start complying. That's what we do in all sorts of other areas where a very more powerful interests are concerned. But with the children, they have no political pull. They're not doing it. They're not doing anything.
Okay. When you say they have no political pull, some of the things that are happening that are going under the radar are very, very severe incidents. And you highlight a few of them in your report. Case of a 3-year-old girl in California who died in state custody. In Illinois, two sisters who were found to have been in an abusive foster care home for years, despite the fact that the girl's family tried to get them out. The case of a 14-year-old girl in Georgia who starved to death, even though a child welfare social worker knew that her mother was not feeding the girl and that the mother kept her in a locked room with no access to a bathroom. These are some of the extreme examples. Tell us about some of the lesser infractions that still concern you.
Well, leading to those are all sorts of safeguards that are supposed to prevent it from happening. The federal jurisdiction requires the states to receive mandated reports of abuse so they can detect them. And that's very important because a lot of kids are dying from abuse and neglect because there are no reports being made, and even though the states are required to do so.
And why aren't they making them?
The mandated reporters aren't doing it, or the reports come in and there's not emergency service reactions, child protective service reaction like they're supposed to be, or they're not tracking problematic families where they have prior reports. There are a whole panoply of failures and omissions. And the problem is that when the states fail year after year after year, the feds do nothing. They do nothing. They announce there's a failure. They tell the state there's a failure. They tell the state, do a improvement program right now. The states don't do it, or they don't do much of it all. They don't do anything. Nothing ever happens.
Why does the federal government not have the incentive to make sure that the states abide by the law and take care of these kids?
Because some members of Congress stand behind the idea of state sovereignty, which really doesn't apply here. The Iowa kids do not deserve less protection than the kids in New Hampshire. If you're going to die, you're going to die, and you shouldn't be dying or in grave jeopardy of disability in any state. And we get all sorts of resistance, but the real bottom line is that these kids have no juice. They have no juice. They're in a confidential system. Everybody's looking away. They don't have political contributions. They're not organized. They don't have lobbyists. Here in D.C., The American Association of Retired Persons spends $25 million a year on the lobbying. All child advocates combined spend less than $1 million. It's 25 to 1 just with that one combination. So they have no juice, and that's the problem.
You say that the judiciary bears some of the responsibility for these failures because they make it hard for children and families to go to court and sue. What do you mean by that?
Well, what's happening is the judiciary is walking away from these kids as well, increasingly. I'm a professor of law. I write texts in the field. They follow the cases. We do amicus briefs. We follow all the cases that are going on in this field. And for the last 10 years, there's been an increasing trend of the federal court saying, no, we won't, just won't decide it. We decide there's no standing for kids in this case. There's abstention even being claimed, equitable abstention, which is – that's inexcusable to do that for these kids.
What's that mean?
Equitable abstention is an argument where you say, okay, I'm not going to decide this because we're interfering with state court judges and therefore we'll just won't even look at it. We won't even look at it. Which is, it would not happen with any other organized group. If it were women or gays or any other organized group, they would not abstain. They're abstaining because this group does not have any political strength at all. That's what's going on here.
A lot of your group's recommendations would require more federal funding and passing of new laws in Washington. You know what things are like in Washington. You know the current political climate, even if it is somewhat in transition right now. How confident are you that your recommendations will be taken up?
Well, I don't know. It's going to require some pressure from the body politic because there is a lot of rationalization going on. There's a lot of stakeholders deciding everything, and children are not stakeholders. They don't have lobbyists or and that's a problem. We really have to rely on the media and people like you, and we have to rely on the body politic to come in. We have to count on people who represent these children to come forward. It's very hard. It's very frustrating. I've been doing this for 25 years, and I can tell you I'm very, as you might tell, very frustrated.
Robert Falmouth, Executive Director of the Children's Advocacy Institute. For more on the group's just-released report, you can go to our website, hereandnow.org. Robert Falmouth, thanks.
Thank you.